Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. This episode is packed with content, which is good because hockey is now done, basketball is now done, the Blue Jays are four games under 500, and I can't pronounce any of the players in this Belgium-Egypt game that's tied at 1-1. But Bob, we got a lot to get to today.
We really do. Should we start with your happiness or mine?
Yours is bigger. Like, the Knicks win the championship after they won game four in that crazy way. It was hard to feel even higher because at that point it felt like, okay, the Knicks are going to win it. Even when they got down by double digits on Saturday, it's like, they're going to win. And they did. So we'll get there. But you were at something that may never happen again in Toronto. You went to a men's soccer game featuring Canada at the World Cup, again, in the city of Toronto, at Toronto Stadium. Wink! I want to hear all about that.
It was great. It really was. The experience of being there, it was expensive. I mean, like $9 for a can of Coke kind of thing, but whatever. Did I spend $14 on popcorn? Yes, I did. But the seats were great. My buddy Adam, who we'll get him on the pod one time because he's actually very knowledgeable about sports. But we went, great seats. Oh my God, the vibe was so good, Matt.
Well, let's start here. Okay. How hard was it to get in? What was it like getting into Toronto Stadium?
It was segmented but smooth. So okay. Tickets had to be produced a bunch of times, like three or four separate times. You had to go through different checkpoints and show your tickets. We had to rip the labels off of our water bottles. And I'm sure that was a sponsorship thing. No one else's water was allowed in the stadium. But we were allowed to bring some in, so that was okay. But actually, like, everything was smooth, though. There were no, like, super delays. We lined up for some free stuff, and the line went pretty fast. It was really well run. And then kickoff was supposed to be at 3, and at 3:01, they kicked off. Like, they landed a lot of things really, really well. It was very professionally run.
Good. I would imagine the hardest thing, and you can't even really blame them, is if you got concessions at the half, would be so hard because there's almost no stoppage in play. It's not like in other sports when you can duck out and get a beer or a drink. It's like everyone collectively, if you want to get food or drink, are going to probably do it around the same time.
There's about four or five inflection moments. And, you know, the one before, then at the half. That's totally true. We were in a section that had some people from Bosnia and Herzegovina in it. And it was pretty civil between all parties. But I will say this. I've gone to hundreds of sporting events in my life because of the job that we do. Some of them have been really exciting. Some of them have involved our national teams in different sports. I've never been to an event that felt as positive or fun or just special more so than this one. It really was something.
It's a Friday. It's a sunny day. And also, anyone in there, 95% has to be a soccer fan. I know there's going to be the corporate types as well. But also, I imagine most people felt this sense of history and pride. It's like, this has never happened before in the city of Toronto. And technically, it ain't going to happen again. So you guys were like collectively in on this little secret.
For years, it was like, you know, Canadian soccer, if we did make the World Cup, which was more often not the case, it was kind of like Curaçao against Germany yesterday, where you're so excited you're there, and next thing you know, it's 7-1. We walked out with a point. I think that we were on hold the better team in that game, although, you know, Bosnia was good too, particularly in the first half. But everybody in there, I think you said it really well, had a sense of occasion. It just, this is the world's biggest sport, and it was here. We walked there from my house. It was just crazy. It felt like the whole world was here and we walked. to the stadium.
That'd be about 35 minutes or so to walk there. What were the streets like? Was it, you know, what was that atmosphere?
A lot of red, a lot of red, a lot of, you know, as you got closer and closer to Liberty Village, I would say, you started to see like a ton of red. I think that people in general, like nobody was complaining. It wasn't like, you know, I used Landsberg's tickets at one of the last Leafs games of the year. And it felt like, as I described to you, I believe on the pod, it felt like everybody was at a job that they didn't like. And it was really the opposite of that. And it felt good to be a Toronto sports fan and just go somewhere and think, wow, this is cool. Not I'm getting ripped off. And everything was expensive. But it was really weird how, I'll put it to you this way. Have you ever been to Disneyland?
Yes.
It's really expensive.
Yes, it is.
And in fact, it's stupidly expensive, but it's also really cool. And families save like for a year or two or more to take their kids to Disneyland. It's like a destination. But when you get there, you're like, there's only one place in the world like this. It was a bit like that, where you're like, is it overpriced? Yes. Is it stupid? Yes. Are we getting gouged? Sure we are. But it's also the singular biggest event in the world if you're a sports fan. And we're here.
It's like going to a Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah, great analogy.
And you're a foodie. It's yeah. Similar.
You know, you can't, if you go to a 3-star Michelin restaurant and it costs $200 for a plate of duck, you pay it because it's $200 worth of duck.
Yeah, that's a perfect way of putting it. And you're not going to get a better version of that. Okay, because I don't want to go down this road of where I start talking gastronomy because I just mispronounced that word. Highfalutin food stuff. So what was it like 15 minutes before Canada tied it at 1? Like early in the second half when it's 1-0 for Bosnia-Herzegovina?
It was never tense, but you sensed the clock was ticking. Because there were still 20 minutes left when they scored, more or less, it wasn't like you were in like the red letter territory.
Right.
But I think everybody was aware that the sands of the hourglass were dropping. But they also played really hard and played really well, and they were consistently pressuring. So it wasn't like when you go to a game and you want your team to win and you can feel they're not going to, and you just want the vibe to change. It always felt like they could tie it, but they hadn't yet. Very different experience when you're a fan.
Yeah. And then what was it like when the goal was scored?
3 to 4 minutes of cheering as loud as anybody could. I explained it this way to my wife. I said, the best way for me to describe the vibe is that 90% of the stadium never sat.
Right.
They were standing the whole time, clapping, cheering. I do think as Canadian fans, we need more chants. We need more soccer chants because nobody knew what to do. And you could only go Canada, go so many times. And the Bosnians like had these really great chants. I don't know what they meant. They weren't in my language. But it was clear that they knew what to do. But the Canadian fans were kind of like, I don't know how to do this.
Little tangent. Imagine Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment trying to create songs to be sung for Leaf games. I feel they would just try to jam as many advertisements and corporate tie-ins as they could.
That's funny. Well, you know who could probably write it for us is ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Keith, yes. Could just ask ChatGPT, what do you think is a good soccer chant?
And then make it
mentions Coca-Cola.
Yeah. But then make it about the Maple Leafs. We're going to need the use of the word synergy. We're going to need something about how Rogers is there for all your high speed internet needs, but also make it about the game as well. Like that would be bad.
Well, this is a good bridge actually, because before we get into the basketball, we've been sort of giving hockey short shrift because basketball has been so engrossing. You know, it was just last night that the NHL season was wrapped up. And I wrote down a bunch of points, and I kind of wrote them down through the lens of, as Toronto sports fans, what's our takeaway? Not just as hockey fans, but as Toronto fans, what's our takeaway? So why don't we start there? Any top line impressions for you?
The first is that Carolina's front office is miles and miles above the Maple Leafs. And that shouldn't come as a shock. But a year or so ago, they trade for Mikko Rantanen. They get rid of Marty Nietzsche's. They get rid of some talent. And they bring in Rantanen. And then Rantanen's like, yeah, I don't want to stay here. And they managed to trade him 2 months later. And it's so much harder to trade a guy when you don't have leverage. And I remember at the time thinking, well, Carolina's fucked. Mitch Marner didn't want to come here. Rantanen wants out. And they go get Stankoven. They get two first-round picks. One of those picks is used to bring in Keandre Miller. And, you know, they're able to find a way. And Bussy, they got on waivers from Florida. And the trade for Taylor Hall. Like, just that's my first thing, is that when everything looked like Carolina was about to go on the downward slope, they were able to completely turn it around.
This is my number one takeaway as well, is, and this was true of the Knicks too, is that we had two champions that were just extremely well-constructed teams. And yeah, that both took what looked like problems and turned them into opportunities. And it kind of took guts. And this is where, as a Toronto sports fan, I feel like we've been kind of ripped off a little bit. Because we watched Carolina win because they had guts. We watched Vegas make the final because they had guts. They fired their coach with like under 10 games left in the season. They made some gutsy moves and some difficult calls. And I don't think all of them were appropriate, but they certainly weren't worried about what people thought. And, you know, it occurred to me, like, our front offices here in Toronto, especially with the Leafs, it's like roster moves are marketing exercises. It's like they're really worried about how's this going to look to everybody. And I think what they don't understand is fans don't care if they win.
On top of that, the Leafs don't need to be insecure. Even if they don't sell out, they're always going to make money. They're always going to make lots and lots of money. So they shouldn't worry about it. It's not like, you know, you're a new team in a market that doesn't really know much about the sport. So let's bring in the 39-year-old star because everyone remembers what he was at his prime and was on the cover of SI. You know, you don't need to do that. But the Maple Leafs, they have this weird insecurity that they don't need to have.
Well, it's a very old-fashioned hockey thought. You know, it kind of goes to bringing in winners, right? This guy's won before, so we can't be criticized if we brought him in because he's a winner. And, you know, really what you need is good, hungry players who fit the style of play that you have. But it's almost like everything is an exercise in covering your ass. Well, we couldn't be blamed for doing this because this guy had done XYZ before. Or, you know, big defensemen are winners. And, like, what you got with Eric Tulsky and his group and the Rantanen deal does personify this, was no matter the situation, their mind was like utterly focused on how do we make this team even 5% better? And it's relentless. Like, I guarantee right now they're looking at their roster and thinking who goes.
Yeah.
I have this anecdote. It was a Darren Dreger moment, and it was just after the Leafs lost the first time to Boston, and there was this feeling like, okay, that was super disappointing, but the team's on the cusp. We're ready to right under Nonis, and it was that whole era, and me and Cebulski were just starting. And I remember I said to Darren on the air, well, what if the team's actually not that good, and they kind of overperformed, and we're not as far along in this rebuild as we think we are? And his answer was, well, that doesn't matter because they're going forward. And I remember thinking, what an awful answer. Like, what an awful answer. Not just from Darren, but if Darren was representing the mindset of the administration. And it all came down to, well, the fans are excited, so we got to go for it because the fans want.
Yeah.
What I got from watching Carolina win and Vegas make it this far was that the fans just want you to win. Like, don't give them what they want. Give them what they're looking for, which is a winning team. And don't trust PR to run your team.
And it feels like where the Leafs are versus Carolina is so far apart. And the crazy thing is everyone is doing the thing now about, oh, the Knicks win and they broke the curse. Hey, Maple Leafs, you can look to the Knicks for inspiration, or, you know, find things that Carolina has done and go, see, even when a deal doesn't work, you can turn around and improvise. And I'm like, the Maple Leafs don't need to look that far. The shame is they never looked within their own building, where the Raptors fired Dwayne Casey and hired Nick Nurse. And they got rid of a star in DeMar DeRozan who said, I want to be here forever. And that was rare. Like a productive American star who wanted to stay here. And they said, we're trading you because that guy, Kawhi, who's angry at Popovich, who we know is never going to stay here for more than 1 year, fuck it. We're going to take that chance. And they did, and it worked out.
We're like LeBron, and we're a conference finals team, but we're not any better than that, and we need to do something. This is a great point, Matt, is people forget that in Toronto, we've seen guts. Alex Anthopoulos had guts and pulled some moves that you would think, well, that's not the obvious move to pull, particularly that year where he went all in and brought in Jose Reyes and Josh Johnson and a whole bunch of guys, and it didn't even work.
No, it did not.
We had to learn from it. That's the other thing is, your point about confidence is interesting, and the fans don't give them any quarter. That's true. It's different making mistakes in Carolina than it is in Toronto. But the Rantanen thing was a mistake, right? Like, they brought in a guy who didn't want to stay there. Can you imagine in Toronto if they swung a huge deal for somebody and that guy didn't want to be here, how insane the fan base would be? I kind of have more respect that Tulski was like, you know, this isn't going to work. Let's just do the best we can.
Yeah.
And moved off a mistake. I think here it would be like, well, let's give him $3 million extra dollars and let's do this and let's try to make him happy and let's try to, you know, placate the situation and the fan base. It's always like, oh my God, there's a problem. You know, like everything in Toronto is like trying to light a candle after someone's had a dump in the bathroom. Like, mask the smell.
I think we can agree the New York Knicks, they seem to be a popular team. And last time I checked, there's a couple reporters that cover that team. Yep. They're not afraid to take chances. And the one thing I didn't hear from any player, oh God, I got to tell you, it's harder being here because there's so much attention with our local basketball team.
Matt,
didn't hear that once.
You may not remember this, but when they were playing poorly against Atlanta in the first round, I said to you, you're a Knicks fan. This has got to be depressing. You said, oh, they're done. They're done. They're never going anywhere. And you were totally wrong, which is fine because the history of that team would suggest they probably were done. But they figured it out and they turned it around. Our team hears they're done and agrees.
On the ice, you know, they'll get a goal scored on them. And you can see it just, it drains all the players. And we can get to the Leafs. Back to the Knicks for a second. One of the remarkable things is no one could see this coming. One of the reasons why so many of us were so down when they were down 2-1 to Atlanta, it wasn't like the Knicks were a juggernaut. They won 53 games. They had Mike Brown as the head coach, who Sacramento was like, not good enough for us. You know, so we don't see this in basketball. We see it in hockey. Vegas had a horrible regular season. They got to game 6 of a Stanley Cup final. The LA Kings, the first year they won the cup, they were an 8 seed. It happens. But in basketball, the number 3 seed in the East gets into the playoffs, and they're setting records for point differential. And they're winning 13 games in a row. And they're coming back from massive deficits to a Spurs team that was a favorite to win right before the opening tip-off of game 1. That's one of the remarkable things about the Knicks, was that you don't see a team turn it on come the playoffs.
It's pretty rare that they do it the way the Knicks did. That was an incredible, epic run. It's a weird analogy, but it reminded me of the Colorado Rockies when Todd Helton was there and they went something like 18-1 to make it to, because they had to actually win out the rest of the season. And then they got to the playoffs and they made the World Series and they went something like 18-1. You know, it happens. I mean, I think that Indiana caught a heater a couple of years ago with Tyrese Halliburton.
Yep.
But they weren't like the Knicks where they went 16-3, and Carolina went 16-3.
But Carolina was consistently the top team in the East, and they were the betting favorite at the start of the season to at least win the Eastern Conference. This Knicks team was always seen as, this is a good team that got bounced by the Pacers, and they fired their coach.
You know what? Let me say a couple things about hockey, and then we can just do full Knicks, okay?
Yeah.
The other thing is the Taylor Hall story was really interesting. Did Jordan Staal deserve MVP? I don't really know. Did anybody deserve MVP? You know, the Conn Smythe. maybe Stan Coven deserved it. He was really inspirational throughout. You know, Marner didn't play well enough in the last three games to make that case, good as he was for 90% of the playoffs. So even in the losing team, they usually don't give position players anyway from the losing team. But I thought with Taylor Hall, I thought it was interesting that he's the first overall pick for Edmonton, wins the Hart with New Jersey, and wins a cup with Carolina. And I thought that's the ultimate nightmare for the Leafs with their high picks, is that they move on and find success elsewhere. But nobody looks at Taylor Hall's career and life and says he would have had that in Edmonton. And that's a weird thing when you have a really great asset, but it's not panning out the way you would love it to.
Well, the Taylor Hall story is think about it. He spent 6 years in Edmonton, you know, had some good years, but they have a losing season every year. They trade him to New Jersey because they want a defenseman, Adam Larson. He wins a Hart with New Jersey. Soon after that, he's traded again. He spends like a COVID year with Buffalo doing nothing. He does some nice things with Boston, but is traded because of salary cap implications. He's then in Chicago. Somewhere in there I missed already. He was in Arizona. I forget which one of the places. And then he goes Carolina and is the second leading scorer on their team in the playoffs. The Taylor Hall story is great.
The goal last night was beautiful. It is great. And I thought to myself about how that's what everybody's afraid will happen with Austin Matthews, is that he'll move on and that he'll find some form of success or even just a life outside of this place. You see with Mitch Marner, like, people obsessed with how Mitch Marner's doing once he leaves here. There's this weird thing that Toronto has that we're not, like, we're the problem. And every time someone leaves and does well, it's proof that we can't win. We're the problem. We're problematic. And I think we just got to let that go. You know, we just got to let it go. And I'm not saying that means that's why we should trade Matthews. You know, I think we probably should trade Matthews. But regardless, that's not the reason to do it. What I learned from Carolina, watching Carolina, was it must be joyful to follow a team that does not act out of fear or small-minded thinking.
And is not slave to we need the stars. Mm-hmm. That as well. They like no notes, A+. With how, and also with Carolina, yeah, they conference finals before this year, 1-12. That's bad. Like, there's no sugarcoating it. But they also won 10 playoff series over the years. You know, like, that's another thing. Well, you know, Toronto could break through like Carolina. No. Don't insult Carolina. They won 10 playoff series before this year. So now you can add four more to that number.
Okay, so the Knicks are the champions. The Knickerbockers are the champions of the basketball world. Describe your feeling watching it, enjoying it afterwards. You're a super fan.
This was the most arduous five-game series I've ever watched. You know, you could say, oh, the Knicks won in five. That must have been a laugher. And no, it wasn't. It was, do you know how difficult it was watching all these games where they never had a lead? Like, just on one level, the amount of times I watched part of Looper, I watched part of Top Gun, I watched part of Amadeus, I watched the first 15 minutes of Inglourious Basterds, and then I made Amy watch the final moment of The Searchers. Because I'm like, you see that shot? That was used by John Wayne and then John Ford, the Searchers. I would do that every game because I had a cowardly moment where I had to run away. But in the end, I'm left in awe of Jalen Brunson because the little guy doesn't usually get it done. And Brunson's not 6'2". He's 6'1" or 6'. But what he did on Saturday night, that's the highest level of basketball. That's LeBron. That's Steph Curry, that's Jokic, whoever player you want to do, that's what it looks like, where he scores 45 points on a night where the rest of the Knicks can't even shoot 30%. It's insane what he did on Saturday against that defense.
He was 4 points away from tying the rest of the team for point total. He scored 45, the rest of the team scored 49. The fact that he did it as a 6-foot guard with a very physical, very big team, completely determined to knock him on his ass. When you see a supercut of all the time the Spurs legally and sometimes not so legally absolutely pulverized him, how he didn't get hurt, how he kept going in there and never got afraid, how he seemed to just pick himself up and never complain. Like he very rarely complained unless it was something egregious. I feel pretty good in retrospect having predicted his rise as the key factor in this series, because it was.
Yep.
And we can get Wemby and the losers in a second, but let's give the champions their flowers for right now. Jalen Brunson, is he now a top five player in the league?
Yes. How can he not be?
Well, let's do the list, right? Okay, so Wemby, right?
Yep.
Jokic, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Shai.
Yes.
Okay, so that's three. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Brunson above Doncic?
Yes. Absolutely. Listen, availability. Both of them are crazy good in the playoffs, but availability I give to Jalen Brunson, a guy who is going to inspire the guys around him to try as hard as they can. I'm sorry, that goes to Brunson. I know we're living in the world like the Carolina Hurricanes, we're living in the world of analytics, but the emotion is still part of it. Brunson is a true leader. When he got shoved down in game one by Wembanyama, he didn't do anything. He didn't retaliate. He didn't get a technical call on him. He didn't spend the rest of the game bitching. He shook it off and kept playing. The level of toughness in Brunson is so much higher than it is in basically anyone else in the NBA. Absolutely Brunson over Luka Doncic.
I would be curious to go back over that series and see what percentage of his points contributed to a run that dug them out of a hole.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I saw a stat that they were behind 72% of the series. And, you know, you see the table where it's like down 14 in this game, down 29 in this game. And it seemed like his game never stopped. And it seemed to crank up, not just in the super high pressure moments where things were like maybe a point or two separated, but also when they were pretty far behind. As I think about it, like he would often be good for 2, 3, 4 out of 5 baskets when it looked like the Knicks just might drift off to sleep. It's like he never, like it's a different form of toughness. It's like we're never going to stop competing no matter how it looks.
I saw Minnesota shut down Jokic. I saw the Spurs do as good as they could on SGA, though I blame that more on all the injuries on the Thunder. But they never shut down Brunson. He found ways to beat you. I would have him over Anthony Edwards. I'd have him over Luka Doncic. You know, the Wemby, Jokic, SGA, those are the three guys. If you want to say better than Brunson, fine. I'm not putting anyone else on that list.
And you were on the road in an elimination game. The next best player on the Knicks was Mikal Bridges, who played okay.
Yeah.
And I think had 13 points on the night.
Josh Pat fouls out.
Yeah, Josh Hart was right after that. 12 yeah. points. Karl Anthony Towns offered almost nothing. He was in foul trouble. They neutralized him totally. The bench wasn't especially good. They have been in other points, but it literally was Jalen Brunson saying, "We're gonna win tonight." It was incredible.
What Brunson did is the single most impressive thing I've seen in basketball since Dirk Nowitzki took the Dallas Mavericks to beat the Miami Heat in the first year of the Big Three. That's the best. It's the best thing I've seen since then. That's number one. It's not even close.
What's so amazing about that, too, is the improbability that this would come from Jalen Brunson, who was a second-round pick, who was the backup to Luka Doncic in Dallas. And when he got, and you know, if you review the tape, when the Knicks made that deal, I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Said they're putting way too much faith in a guy who's never shown he can run a team before. And lots of people felt that way. And it usually doesn't work out. You know, you think of Emmanuel Quickley. We brought him in because he looked like a good sixth player. And we're like, maybe he can run a team. And the answer is, he sort of can. He's okay. Which is usually how it goes. But Brunson, his whole career, small guy, not especially athletic. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Tim Legler. Somebody did a breakdown of Brunson's game. And they made a great point, which is usually when small guards can score in bunches, it's because they're super fast. They're just real, like a De'Aaron Fox fast. Like, they're just hard to contain. That's not even true of Brunson.
No, that is footwork, experience, also lack of fear, total confidence. Like it's the whole bag. Like it really is. And by the way, maybe I can throw in, I was going to say LeBron when they were down 3-1 to Golden State. You know, there's a couple you could throw in there. But for me, what he was able to do, and just to close it like he did on the road, I'm almost running out of things, superlatives to say about Jalen Brunson. Also, should be added, he did take less money when he signed his extension to stay there. He could have got more money, but he took less money because he knew they needed to bring in other parts.
Between Zoran Mamdani and Jalen Brunson, it has been a pretty darn good 6 months for New York underdogs.
Couldn't agree more.
Wemby.
Yeah.
How do you see how this ended, taking into account the five games of the final and then also the road to get to the final?
It's exactly the road that everyone always was waiting for, was that a young guy eventually is going to melt down. And he melted down and he didn't melt down. He got tired. He got tired. He made the mistakes of youth and he did it in every game late. I'm not killing him because I saw how good he was on defense. It's what we all were waiting for. And I think it's better for the NBA. The story of Victor Wembanyama, whenever he wins a championship, because he will, that story will feel cooler versus if he won it this year. Because it was like, oh, okay, so you guys won the draft lottery 3 years in a row, or you moved up, and you got all the super young guys that were just more talented and were taller, and you won the title. It would have felt unsatisfying. This makes the Wembanyama story better. Victor doesn't know it now, nor should he ever feel that. But for basketball fans, this was great.
Do you see a jump coming in his game? Because we've seen a jump every year that he's been in the league. He's pretty high now, though, in terms of what can be achieved. In this offseason, do you think he comes back a better player or simply a more focused and refined player?
I think he comes back a little bit better. I think he comes back 3 to 5% better. Everything about him says he's going to work out. He's going to try everything. You know, he is not going to rest on his laurels.
You know, the consistent point is that he needs a go-to offensive move. Mm-hmm. And that when you're 7'5" and maybe even a little bit taller, you should be able to develop something. Like Kareem had his sky hook. Just anything, really. Like, you need an unbeatable move. And it feels like whatever it is, it's going to happen above 7 feet.
Yes.
Because that's just a place where nobody else can go. There were times
I think he will.
They threw lobs to him that honestly looked like they would have sailed out of bounds if he didn't catch them. Like, and into like the eighth row. It was crazy. So yeah, his lob game has to come back tighter. I don't think defensively he can be much better. Like, how much better could you possibly be? I will say one thing though. Two things. First is the narrative that maybe Victor isn't who we thought he was is fucking stupid. He's better than we thought he was, and we thought he was great.
Yeah.
I do think this conditioning thing is the one thing that worries me. It feels like the training wheels have to come off now, and I wonder how that's going to affect him in the regular season. Like, he has to get used to playing 40 minutes in a tough game because you can't just suddenly do it in the playoffs. And that's obvious. He's going to put on more strength. He's only 23. I'm worried a little bit about how they use him now because the training wheels have to come off. He can't be an alpha and be protected. And I'm not sure how he'll respond to that. Knock on wood. I hope it's great.
If I'm the Spurs, I'm not worried about regular season wins. It's almost like you just got to work on it just to help him and the guys around him to help them develop a more mature and diverse offensive game. You know, I think that's what next year is more than anything else. Because, you know, he can just physically overwhelm 70% of the teams, but it's about him finding out the rest of his game. But I mean, in conclusion, we're not worried about Wemby. Neither one, I'm not worried at all about Wembanyama.
I think there's people who want him to be the next Jordan. I think we have to accept that that might just never happen.
Yeah.
But that there will be some form of generational greatness here that we get to enjoy. I don't know how long that window is, but it's going to be thrilling. Man, the NBA, everybody was ready to bury it, and now somehow it feels more energized than ever.
The Knicks winning gives everyone just a lift. Having Wembanyama lose, this was the best case scenario for the NBA. And it's positioned itself in an excellent, excellent place. Bob, we got about like 1 minute left. Just know this. After this, it's World Cup, it's the Blue Jays, and it's the Toronto Argonauts. I hope you've got a lot of takes ready for Kevin Mitel and that group of receivers that the Argonauts have.
As soon as I find out who he is, I will have tons of takes.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.